the oldest one.
Yeah. Oh, yes, we would. She would play with the children. They really treated me great.
Mm-hmm.
They were just really, they really treated me great. And, you know, that's another thing, too, about this sexual nursing job. I mean, you go into these homes, you know, and if there were other servants in the homes, like, you would sit at the family table. The servants wouldn't,
mm-hmm.
but they treated you on that level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it made you feel very good and very fine about the whole thing. As I was accepted, you know, and respected. And that's good. That's what I wanted. I wanted to earn it, of course, you know, too. But, yeah, see, Mary Beth would play with the children, and any outings we'd have, we'd all go, you know, together with the children, whatever. And really and truly, the reason for my coming back was not because we weren't treated properly or that she wasn't getting excellent schooling or anything like that. I did miss my brothers and sisters, and then, of course, when I started getting these letters from this girlfriend of mine telling me that she was getting 60 cents an hour, and the work was not that difficult, you know, and I thought, oh, wouldn't that be super to be able to go home and to be able to support my little girl and be able to come home every night and see her every night. Just great.
Now, how much were you making up in Seattle then?
$25 a week.
So then, what was your plan? When you thought about coming back and you decided to return, what
would
you have a plan in mind?
Well, yes, what I thought I would do is, I couldn't go in the service. Because of the war, I would like to have gone in the service because my father being in the service and brothers and all that, you know, and I would like to have it, but being that I had this dependent, of course, at that time you couldn't enlist. So I thought what I would do is I would come back and I would work till the war was over. And then I would like to get some more training, you know, so that I could become an RN, because I really enjoyed it. I thought it was just fascinating, and I liked it very much. It was just great. I just didn't want to take care of somebody that was well, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Even though I was paid just the same as if someone was ill, and having a little girl, my little daughter, wasn't made up for the other things, you know, but that was what I wanted to do, and I felt kind of guilty at the time, too, going into the, hiring at Douglas, because there was such a terrific shortage of nurses. And, I felt so bad because doctors called me and asked me if we wouldn't reconsider and come and work for them, and because they have a terrible shortage of nurses, you see. And I said, no, you know, I feel I have to do this. And after the war's over, then, I'd like to get more training, and I'd like to be able to save up the money, get more training, and then I'll go from there. And then when I went out there too, to hire at Douglas too, you know, because of my background, a couple of years, they said, well, would you like to work in a dispensary? I said, oh no, I don't have any training to work in a dispensary, you know. No, well, we need help there. You can work with the nurses, you know. I said, if I'm going to work in the war effort, I'm going to be Rosie the Riveter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going to do. I'll go all the way, whatever. And after the war, that's different, you know.
Mm. Now, tell me, your plan was to move back to your father and with your
brothers and sisters? I did. Who did?
Now, tell me a little bit about getting the job at Douglas.
What
the process was like and what the interview was like.
Mm-hmm.
How that all went.
Well, I found that they were interviewing people. Douglas had rented a great big, car dealership building down there on Long Beach Boulevard. I remember they were on the east side of the street, and I don't know, it seems like about 800 blocks or something down in there, you know, and my gosh, I went in there and got an application, and there were people in there, it was just so crowded, you know, they're just herding people around like cattle, and you saw an application, you know, and they asked you different questions as to your educational background and that sort of thing, and what do you think you'd like to do. And, of course, I had no idea. I just said, riveters or anything in the factory, you know, I just will not go to work in a dispensary. And, my Lord, I'm telling you, it took about 3 days to go through all that process. The interviewing, and take this test, you know, and then the physical and all these things. It was a long, drawn-out process.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to wait so much. There was so much waiting in between, you know.
Was it all done in that one?
Yes. There was a whole big... Like I say, like a big car dealership, great big huge room. It was all empty, but they had desks and they had little examining rooms, you know, and all that sort of thing. And it was a madhouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a real madhouse. And I remember that I was kind of excited because I thought, gee, more than anything else, I thought, gee, it's going to be so neat just to be able to work 8 hours, you know, or 10 or whatever, and to come home every night. So it just thought was so super.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, when I got the job and everything else, then I thought, well, I'm going to have to move the family from Lomita to Long Beach.
Well, then tell me how you got assigned to the job. They asked you during the interview process if you want to go to the center.
Yes.
You indicated no.
No, I didn't want to do that.
And did they then ask what you wanted to do, or they simply assigned you?
They simply assigned me. They said I said anything except dispensary, as long as I'm going to be, you know, going there. We kept talking about Rosie River. That's fine. I said, I'll do anything like that. Fine. See?
Mm-hmm.
And so they just put me in, and my first job, I had it as a riveter.
Mm-hmm. Did you know what that meant?
No, I had no idea. Lord, no, I had no idea. Do you know? Golly, that tells you how, when you're young, you know, and I was so excited, like I said, I was going to be able to earn enough money to have my child, you know, all this time. But it didn't really matter. I just felt that I could do it no matter what the heck it was, you know, see? And so I had never even seen pictures of the ribbon like a good shipyard, anything like that. I had no idea.
Was that what your girlfriend was doing?
No, this girlfriend of mine, but she was a Rockwell inspector.
Oh.
It's where you test the tensile strength of material.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a sit-down job, and it was a very nice job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a hard job. And, you know, like it was paid more too. See, it's comparable work.
Mm-hmm.
Comparable.
Mm-hmm. So
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Tell me what
it was like.
My goodness.
After the 3-day interview, you then went right to work.
No. It didn't go right to work. It must have been about 5 days because I know what I. The first thing, I'm not sure I had the job, you know. Then I was ready, of course, but I wanted to get the family over here.
Mm-hmm.
So I rented a house on Orange Avenue, 800 block on Orange Avenue. And it was a 3-bedroom apartment, which was just super, you know. And so moved the family over there. And then I got a ride. We shared, you know, the car pool. But anyway,
how was that arranged?
They helped us out with the plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put
so
their name.
Even before you started the car pool, they didn't set up.
No, I'm trying to remember how I first got to work.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I first got to work, I think it was the bus because there was bus service out to Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived right there on Orange and 8th, so it was not bad. It was even then, it was pretty good then.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I remember, I first started out with the bus. And I got out there, and I finally got into a carpool.
Can you, do you remember your first day?
Oh, do I ever. I'll never forget that. Yes, I never will forget that. They told us, you know, we had to wear coveralls, so I bought a pair of coveralls, and you had to tie your hair up, and so... The only thing I had to buy was the coveralls. So I got the old coveralls, you know. I tied my hair up, and then I wore my nurse's, I still had to wear nurse's Oxfords, you know, and they had these heels like so, regular heel, not a wedge or anything. I wore those, and they brought us out there to personnel, and got our badges and everything, and signed a lot of other clips for our ID and everything else, and then they took us out there in a bus out to the Building 12, which is the largest support of a mile building 12. And I was assigned to rivet on the B-17. And I remember when I going in there, and the lights, you know, were so yellow, and it just everybody looked like a bunch of zombies out there. And it was just, I was overwhelmed at the size, because the area that I was assigned, it was a section of the, pretty good section of fuselage of the B-17. It was a pretty good sized aircraft, you know. And here these people were just working around like crazy, and I thought, gee whiz, you know, this is really something. I mean, I've bitten off more than I can chew here. So I'd never even had a hammer in my hand in my life, nothing like that, a screwdriver, anything. You know, I didn't know anything about mechanics or anything. So they assigned me to two men, and they were two older men, beyond the draft age, I guess. And I was so lucky. They were the nicest little fellows, so they taught me how to. They took me right to the aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first job that I had was skinning after the framing of the aircraft, you know, and then you frame it, then you skin it. See, where you fit the material and you drill a hole, process it, and you rivet.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to. My first job was I didn't do the skinning. I did the riveting after I did the skinning.
Mm-hmm.
I was a riveter. I was.
And you And that was the first time you saw lizards.
Oh, my word, yes. And they were big. They eventually got reduced to small now, but they were big. Some of them were...
18?
Oh, yeah. Some of them like that, they were called a size 13 gun, and they had a 12 gun, a little bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had to shoot quarter-inch rivets, you had to use a 13 gun.
That's what you were shooting?
Both, because it depends upon the section of the aircraft you're riveting. If you're riveting in a heavy, tight set for your longer runs, they would have quarter-inch rivets, you see. And
was the gun suspended or?
No, they were attached to air hose that was hooked up to an outlet from the ground floor.
So you had a hose at the whole time.
Oh yes, and you know I'm telling you, it was frightening. It was just I was so afraid because we heard so much about sabotage and this, you know, and how you had to be careful of this and they had all kinds of warnings out about them. The loose lip will sink a ship, mm-hmm. and they just, so you're all hyped up about security, you know. And here these fellows, I got the aircraft to shoot the rivets, and in other words, they said, now look, here's the hole, here's the drill motor, electric drill motors then, not air motors then.
Mm-hmm.
Electric drill motors, you had to ream out the hole and put the rivet in, and you had to shoot it. And there was, you know, they didn't
put it in the
well, there wasn't any preliminary training.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't put you down like we do nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
A workbench and a vise with a piece of material that you can drill some holes and shoot rivets.
Mm-hmm.
They took you up to the plane and said, now, this is the lower part of the B-17. What you're going to do is you're going to tack the skin to those frames up there.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're going to do, you're going to put a rivet in there and you're going to pull the trigger on the gun where your partner on the other side will be bucking it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have to learn to do. And it was just, I don't know how in the world I ever got through without really damaging the craft because, you know, it just the good Lord, I guess, was looking out for me because there had been cases of the ship being damaged. The only damage I ever did was when I was trying to walk inside the B-17, they had these frames across here. And the way they were built like so, they had little lightning holes, you know, before they put the floor down.
Mm-hmm.
So I was walking along, going to the inside to take my turn to buck because I also had to learn to buck. Because when you're a riveter, you take your turn. You shoot, you work outside the aircraft one day. Next day, you get inside and you buck rivets.
Oh, yes,
you had to learn how to do both.
Uh-huh. And that was from day one.
From day one. But as I was walking along to go take my turn to buck, my heel on this nurse's box was caught in the lightning hole.
Mm-hmm.
And the skin on the bottom of the craft was O2O material, very, very thin, and it was just tacked. Well, when I caught my heel on there, down I came. And this whole thing ripped up because it was only just hacked. I was, oh my goodness, they're going to put me in jail for sabotage. They're going to be sure I'm sabotaging and accepting everything else. I was just absolutely petrified. And of course they didn't. And they were very nice about it. And I learned to walk. Oh, yes. I was just absolutely scared of it. And then to pull the trigger on that gun, you know, it made a lot of noise. And the small gun made a lot of noise. And you know, you weren't sure what was happening on the other side because most of the cases, you couldn't see your partner because it was all, you know, way inside the B-17. You're tying in, you can't see the other person. So you have to learn to feel, touch, you know, the bar, pushing the rivet out, that sort of thing. You had to learn. You had to be a team.
Mm-hmm.
See, and that's another reason why they put you on the inside one day and the outside the next.
Oh,
so you would learn.
How did they sign the team?
Did you hire it in?
Uh-huh.
It hired in. Here's your partner.
And
you know?
the two men, what, work alongside?
Yes. Yes, they would work alongside, and they would they were training quite a few people,
mm-hmm.
or training breaking in because
mm-hmm.
there wasn't any. You went to work right away on that aircraft,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they'd be around, you know, and they'd say, all right, now you put the rivets in here, and we have rivet aprons, you know, and
mm-hmm.
you put certain sizes in here. And here if it was just a regular routine installation, now I finally graduated up to the installation right where the wing section was, and they had all kinds of instrument brackets on the inside. So we were fabricating and installing a fairing. And boy, you know, we got so we could drill and just miss those longs in there like nobody's business. Just really do a good job, you know. And, but in the very beginning, it was just very, very frightening.
Mm. How many holes would you have to rivet, say, in the beginning? How large a section would you work on?
Well, it would be a panel.
Mm-hmm.
A panel would be, my goodness, it would be the length of this room.
So you would walk...
You'd walk down there and you'd shoot so far. Then you get up, you have platforms,
mm-hmm.
you know, platforms, and you move the platform, and you move it back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Now, how did you work the timing with the bucker inside if you couldn't see each other?
Tap,
mm-hmm.
by sound.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you put the rivet in, and you get it on with the gun, and then your riveter would touch the, you could feel it, see? And then you would pull it down, you shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to, depending upon the length of the rivet and the size of it, you know, you know just how long to stay on the gun.
See,
you know just how long to shoot it, because the specifications tell you you must have 1.5 times the diameter of the upset head for any rivet. That's about the specification, engineering mm-hmm. specification. So if you pull the trigger too long, you'd have a flat rivet, and then you take it out. And that was, oh boy, that was rough. Because when you have to take the rivet out, that means you have to draw it out. And if you weren't right on the money and didn't draw very carefully, you could make it an elongated hole. Okay? And in many cases, you could go to the next size over to clean the hole out.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you could cause a real bad problem, so maybe you have to splice along inside.
Mm-hmm.
Cut that section out, put another section in. That'd be an engineering
mm-hmm.
item. So there's a lot of responsibility to it
mm-hmm.
for 6 cents an hour, believe me.
Now, as a bucker, exactly what would you do? You would be inside.
As a bucker, you know, and it was a very uncomfortable position. You have to lay on the side of the thing there. And I've been drilled in the hip more than one time. Person would be working along, the rivet would be working along, and they'd see there was some sealant or something, or some holes that weren't right real straight, so they always tap first and, you know, get out of the way, see? But if they didn't tap, you lay there and you wait, see? And so, this one particular time, this gal, she didn't tap, and here I am up here, you know, waiting to butt some rivets, and I see I didn't hear her ringing, you know, up there. I was waiting for, and all of a sudden, whammo, right in the hip, you know. And so, of course, you know, they take you, you go to the dispensary, you gotta sit in hot water, and you wear hot, wet dressings on your hip. But that's nice, and that kind of an injury never bothered me so much, a clean drill.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple that were bad, like one broke off, and a number 10 drill, 3/16 of an inch, and it went into my knuckle here, and it was so sore, my knuckle was
mm-hmm.
so sore. I was going like this, you know, trying to pop off the head and punch it, and it broke off in here. Then I had another one that I was drilling inside the ship as we're installing instrument brackets, and we use these big extension drills. And I was reaming a hole up in here, and I was trying to pull it like this. You know, they're very, very tiny, 3/32 of an inch, long, 12 inches. And it broke, and it didn't break, but it bent, and it whipped. And it whipped me here, and I had black and blue, my eyes black and blue, and I had bloody here and here. And then on the outside, when I was riveting the fairing in the bombier area, there's an attachment called a cleco. When you drill a hole, in order to temporarily attach it, this has a little spring load thing, you push it in, it expands, and it holds the metal. Well, I was pulling it over like that, and I put it in, pushing it in, you know, and then what I'd done was it was pretty loose. It popped loose, and it come out and hit me in the face, and it cracked my teeth, a couple of my teeth here, and I had another bloody nose and a cut lip and everything else. But so throughout the years, I have my porcelain replaced, my teeth all the time in the front, you know. But it was just a real petrifying thing. I never forget the first day when I went out there. Just here's the aircraft now, and there's here's these holes. First start out here, and this is the size rivet to use. And someone said the other side. Now what they did for the bucker was one of the men that was trying to train me. He was experienced.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I was nervous.
So the first day you riveted.
Oh yes.
And they first taught you how to ream out the holes.
Ream out the holes
mm-hmm.
and rivet, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I got to like rivet pretty good, but, you know, this like I said, this man that was experienced. Then they put someone else with me. You know, it had been learning to buck rivet. And then finally, when I got good enough to rivet and do it pretty good, then they started training me on the inside.
Now, was that in the course of one day? Or was
probably a couple of weeks.
Now, in the very beginning, when you first started, like that first day, how large a portion would you manage to get riveted in the course of the day?
I don't remember. I remember I was so overwhelmed at the responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of a job that I thought was going to be a lot easier than nursing.
Mm-hmm. What did it feel like in terms of holding that rivet on the first day?
It was heavy. It was heavy, and I was never used to holding, you know, things like that. You know, first, the tennis racket, my arm, I had pretty good muscles and that sort of thing, so I had an advantage there. A lot of gals didn't have any building up of muscles, and my arm was always much larger, this right
mm-hmm.
one. And but the responsibility of it overwhelmed me more than the weight of the
mm-hmm.
other thing. The fact that how I could goof up something, and how maybe they would have to take the skin off, the whole big skin off, and things like that, if I didn't do my job properly. And then when I slipped, when they finally let me go inside to train how to be a bucker, when I slipped and caught my heel on that frame, I was a nervous wreck. It took me a long time to get over that. I was so nervous. I thought, oh dear, you know, I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm just not going to be able to do it. But then finally I calmed down.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't too long before I found out that I was mechanically inclined. It fascinated me. The work fascinated me. I thought, oh, how marvelous. You know, this big, beautiful thing. And the line moved once in every shift. In fact, they were putting out a B-17 and every 8 hours. Now, that's a B-17 Fortress. So they put me right on the assembly line. There wasn't any bench job or anything like that. I was right where they moved that big bird, you know.
So in other words, once after you got the hang of it, you would, in the course of one shift, finish your whole panel.
Oh, yes. Definitely. Oh, yes. Yes. Yes,
so
you're quite right.
Can you describe the physical setup in terms of the way the work was organized and the other people and the scaffolding and things?
Well, each person had their own panel sections, like you referred to as a panel. And, of course, engineering-wise, they were station to station. They were identified as stations. But as far as we people coming in off the street and learning, it was a panel. That was your panel. It was your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And each person was assigned according to the panels and sections of the aircraft, you know, see?
And the width of the panel as well as
the length. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. A full length and width. And you could, you could have two panels overall length, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be your job assignment. They had the industrial engineering would determine, you know, how much work they thought a person should accomplish in 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would assign you accordingly. That's where they would assign you.
And
that was what they expected to get done in 8 hours. Yeah.
So you'd have scaffolding on the outside of the plane.
Yes, you would have stands.
Mm-hmm.
You would have long stands like step ladders, and they'd be wide like that. And you would step up, you know, see, depending upon your panel, and then you would move it down. And there wasn't a long scaffolding.
Oh, you had to move?
Oh, yes, you had to move your stands. Oh, yes, we had to move our own stands. We had to do everything for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, we did. And then they had, when you got a certain level, like the people that worked on top, they in the nose section, they had a scaffolding built. And they had these little platforms that you'd flip back, you know, back and forth, so you'd work like tying in certain panels of that section, see. But aft, that is the part of the work that I did. Now, there was scaffolding in some positions.
Mm-hmm.
There was scaffolding in some positions, yes. But the work that I started out in, no.
How did you react when you first walked out there the first day to things like the noise?
Oh, gosh, I couldn't get over it. It was just deafening. And the lights were so, gosh, it was just, everybody looked like they were zombies, you know. Real horrible yellow. And many people wore the glasses. People wore glasses. Many of them had shaded too, so that even made them more weird, you know. And I was very impressed with the way people were trying to get a job done too. They really were working hard and long hours. I found out later, you know, they were all very busy, and I thought it was just really great the way people were helping one another too. They were really trying to help one another.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really a lot of dedicated people.
Now, you actually started in December of 42.
Right.
What was it like in terms of the temperature?
Cold, very cold. Mm-hmm. But the building now, as far as the building was concerned, that building, they were new, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they were quite comfortable. But I mean, as far as the weather, getting in it back and forth, the work was cold.
Mm-hmm.
But no.
But the building itself
was very nice, very nice. Uh-huh. The building was very comfortable, a lot better than it is now. They haven't kept the maintenance up in those buildings at all. And it's ungodly hot out there in the summertime, and it gets awfully cold in the winter.
What did you do in terms of ear protection? Was there anything because of the noise level?
Yes, we had earplugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I was pretty good about wearing my earplugs, especially when I'd shoot the quarter-inch rivets, you know. And there were some people that were very good about wearing them. That's just like seatbelts in a car, you know, you start out doing it, And then sometimes you get a little bit careless and just finally don't wear them. But as far as the noise is concerned, I always seem to be able to adapt the noise pretty good. It never bothered me too much. Some people made them very nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that even when I'm working in final, some people couldn't stand working in final because the test stands, these big motors they had, that you know, just drive you crazy. And that's why a lot of people would wear these custom-made headsets to block out all those noises. But I was pretty good about wearing my earplugs.
And do they block out the noise?
Well, not really good. Mm-hmm. Not really good.
So you still have to hear the person's tap.
Absolutely. Well, the tapping. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Oh, yes, you did. And
when did you find when you learned how to bust in, which of the two did you prefer doing?
Oh, I like to shoot the rhythm.
Uh-huh.
Especially if I had a good partner now.
Uh-huh.
I remember I had one gal that I worked with. Oh, she was so good. She was very fast. You know, we were a terrific team. We could get our job done in no time, and say in 7 hours, it would take 8, and without any problems. You know, and we always took quite a bit of pride in our work. You know, we wouldn't, it always looked nice, and we didn't have any errors and squawks and that sort of thing. And it was just really great when you have a good partner. But I enjoyed the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, in some of the areas that we finally ended up having to rivet in, like I say, there were a lot of instrument brackets and things, it was so hard and miserable inside there, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You'd have to crawl up in there and you'd get cut. You know, you'd always getting cut, your arms and legs cut all the time, because you couldn't. You weren't a long sleeve, but you still cut through the,
yeah.
your sleeves, you know, and your pants. And so, really and truly, the hardest part was the button.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in order to be sure your partner, you give your partner a break too, come out and let them shoot you.
So you were still alternating on a daily regular basis?
Yes, mainly because it's only the fair thing to do. It's miserable
again,
sir.
Everyone really prefer riveting.
Oh, yes. Well, not everyone. Now, I had one little gal that she was just a little tiny thing, and she liked to buck because she didn't like to get her hands dirty. And she could wear tight gloves, you know. And and she had beautiful hands. When you're riveting, you've got to have your fingers, you've got no fingernails, you've got to feel your rivets, you know, and you've got to be really fast, you know. You can wear a glove, a tight glove on the right hand most of the time, you know. But I still used to have to cut my fingers off here and then never on the left hand. So she didn't mind it. And she was tiny. She was a little tiny thing. And she'd crawl up in there, get next to underneath. She didn't need underneath the floor, you know, the B-17 back up there. And she, no problem at all.
Mm. And
she preferred it.
She would stay inside and buck, and you would continue with it. Now, tell me about things like, well, first of all, when did your first day? How did you feel physically at the end of the first day?
I was just wrung out emotionally. I was just wrung out. And all the time that I was doing the nursing, there were times of concern, but I thought I had control of it, and I knew what I was doing, and I knew pretty well what to expect, you see. But this is something that was so far removed from anything I'd ever done in my life. And because of the war and everything else, and all the sabotage and else, I was just absolutely petrified.
That
I wasn't
was
sure
really,
if...
Oh,
you bet, you bet. Oh, yes. And I just didn't know, you know, if I was going to be able to hack it or not. But I kept going back.
Then how did you feel physically at the end of the day?
Exhausted. But mostly emotional, you know.
Mm. How did it feel in terms of the kind of arm motion?
Oh, my arms just ached. My arms did ache because I wasn't used to that. You know, holding up, down, all that sort of thing. I wasn't used to that. No, it took a long time to get used to that.
They didn't give you any orientation in terms of exercises and movements
nothing.
That would help?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I don't know how we got through all that war the other day. Although there were some accidents out there, that's true. But my word, you know, as the years went on, when you had people in, even on the beginning of a new program, even if they'd been laid off, say, for a year or a year and a half, when they come back, they still put them through a refresher program before they ever go on the aircraft.
But you had no orientation at all?
None whatsoever.
You went.
This is a rivet gun. This is a motor. You know, and these are rivets. And in order to shoot, just put the rivet in that hole. If it isn't clean, when you put it in, if it doesn't fit, you take it out and you ream it. But you'd be sure you have the right size grill. You know, see? And then before you pull the trigger, you be sure that your partner over there pushes it a little bit so you can feel it on there. And then don't pull too hard, because if you do, you can go clear through the ship. You know, if you put too much pressure on your gun, you could shoot a hole right in the ship. And that was done many times.
And so your very first shooting, your very first time, was
right on the line.
Right
on the line.
Now, when you were brought out from personnel and told, this is the plane, here's the river gun, were you introduced to the other people around you at all?
Oh, yes. Well, when the bus out, they took us to at the time, I forget, the general foreman, and the general foreman turned us over to a senior A-lead man.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, in turn, I remember, took me right to these two men.
Mm-hmm.
And then, then after you started working, they introduced us to the people around, but they didn't have any set policy.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I became a supervisor, even when I was a lead man, when people came in my crew, I would take them, introduce them right on down, and introduce them to everybody on
mm-hmm.
the crew and all that sort of
mm-hmm.
thing. But it was a pretty hurried up thing during the war. We didn't have time for those pleasantries and that sort of thing, you know. Just get the job done. Train fast and get the job done.
Now, how did it work? The whole group of you who'd gone to personnel together would just be brought to the same train?
No.
How were the assignments made?
They would just take people. We all, the day that we came in through personnel, and they'd say, all right, so-and-so, go over to this